President Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. As you heard in the introduction, my name is Don Nikoloff, and I will be with you for at least the next hour. We have a great show planned for you tonight. In fact, I'm not going to waste much time on this July the 9th on the West Coast, now already July the 10th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. Welcome, everyone. So nice to have you here. I'm hoping that you are very enlightened by tonight's show. We have with us, now becoming a frequent guest and requested by many of the listeners, an author who wrote the book, The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. And I raise my voice there because it has a question mark at the end. And also, currently, he has also written another work called Questions and Answers with the Elohim. And it is a very interesting book available as a PDF on his website, and he'll be giving you some information about that in a few minutes. And this is channeled information from two groups, the Ra Group and the Council of Elohim. Now, we have talked about this on past shows, so we're not going to spend a lot of time talking about where the message is actually coming from, although tonight's guest may choose to make some distinctions as to the differences of the two messages. What is apparent to me, having read the work and having talked with him, as well as having the groups actually address me the last time our guest was on the show on Evident Footprints. And we may possibly, I'll just say this with a bit of reservation, we may have a visit from them this evening. I've prepared a few questions that I'd like to ask, and I didn't try to structure things too much. In fact, we're going to just let spirit sort of lead tonight's show. With that, I would like to welcome back to Evident Footprints my good friend, Mr. Wynn Free. Wynn, welcome.
Hey, Don. Nice to be here. And, you know, I always get a little bit concerned when someone says I have a great show planned, because I might have to live up to some kind of expectation. So...
Well, I planned it by getting you on the show.
I see. You were sure enough that it would be a great show if I was here, yes?
Yes, there's no doubt about that.
I am honored that you think so highly of me. And, you know, we're talking about these messages from somewhere else. And, you know, I'd like your listeners to just imagine that they're living their life and they're going through their life in a normal way or abnormal way, however they do, and suddenly the person they're close to says, I have this strange feeling and something wants to talk to you that's not me. That's not exactly the way it was said, but it was like, these guys want to talk to you. And suddenly a voice says, could you please ask us questions? And you have no idea who you're talking to. And it's kind of like you're in the twilight zone and you're asking questions. And, of course, the first thought that I had was, can I trust this? Who is communicating with me? Why are they communicating? And, you know, for a period of time, they're just saying, ask us questions, ask us questions, ask us questions. And you're asking questions, and you're not even sure you could believe their answers. you know, there's nothing obviously wrong with their answers, or there's no signs that there was something untrustworthy, but it's, you know, just have your listener put yourself in the position of being in this circumstance, and how would they relate to it? You know, what would they think? Because that was the circumstance that I was put in, and, you know, all my life I've been interested in metaphysical things. I read many, many books by Edgar Cayce. I was in the process of writing the book about David Wilcock, which tied him to Edgar Cayce, and really was bringing forth the messages of Cayce and Wilcock's alleged source, which was explaining who they were. And in my entire life, I have never, ever been interested in channeled information. In fact, my tendency was to not be interested and to not sure if I could trust it, afraid that I'd give up my power. You know, many, many things going on inside my mind. And my friend Terry she actually was more interested in channeled information. And one time, you know, she actually went every week to a woman who channeled. And I never even go in and watch. I was, you know, so apprehensive about putting myself in the power or spell of someone who channeled. And then I find myself in a circumstance where I have someone that I'm closely connected with that every few days is telling me, those guys want to talk to you again. And imagine how you would feel. You know, when it first started happening, it was actually our lives were absolutely in a miserable space. I was running around selling things at festivals and dragging this person along with me, and they were miserable. And in the middle of all this miserableness, this voice would say, they want to talk to you again. And it's like I knew there was something phenomenal going on, but it was almost as if it was like turning on a nightly radio show and then turning it off again and then forgetting that it happened and just making tape recordings of everything and piling all the tapes up in a pile, saying, I'm going to have to get back to that and see what they really, really want, who they really are and what they're saying and study it. And it actually, it wasn't until she left me that I had this pile of tape recordings, and I was kind of hurt. And I was thinking, I don't even want to listen to them. Because up to that point, I never transcribed any. I probably never even listened to them after the original recording. And I just threw them in a bag and said, I'll get back to this. And then I didn't throw them away. I listened to them. And as I listened, I felt this energy dance around me. I could feel the energy of something. And I got really into transcribing all these tapes. And before you know it, as I was reading them, and I said, man, I couldn't believe what I was reading. I couldn't believe how it looked, you know, after the fact. And I don't know, did you ever go to the website conversationswithmygirlfriend.com?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I did.
That was actually, you know, that had a lot of the transcripts of these original discussions, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And here was, you know, this voice that said they were the Council of Elohim, and that they were a creator god of this realm, and that what I was doing was very important. And in that moment, it seemed extremely far away to ever know how that this would be important to someone else. I had no idea where to start. I had no idea, you know, what to do. And plus, Daphne, who was channeling, kept saying, I think I'm making this up. I think this is crazy. And she was going through these incredible, what I've learned to identify as negative attacks. And she would, you know, wake up in the middle of the night screaming. And over time, I learned that they really were negative attacks. I learned that there really was intelligence that was, didn't want this to happen and was doing everything to blockade it, and up to and including things that would happen in the physical world that shouldn't have happened, you know, not just on a psychic level, but physical manifestations. I remember the final thing that caused her to leave. She's here now. Do you want to talk about it? Do you want to tell what the final thing was? Remember? Yeah, here. There. I'll let her talk about it here.
Hi, Daphne. How are you?
I'm going to speakerphone on so that we can both talk.
Yeah, now you have to be careful. We might get feedback. With... Yeah.
Okay.
Modern technology, folks.
There we go. Oh. All right. So,
okay, I did want to make one comment, Wynn, and that was you had referred to a couple of years of just, I think you said, pure misery. You've made it to Evident Footprints, so those days are over.
Okay, thank you.
Something to look forward to tonight. Hi, Daphne, how are you?
Hey there, I'm doing okay.
That's good, good to hear. Nice to have you on the show tonight.
Thank you very much.
Wynn said you were going to describe what caused you to leave the first time. You were having all of these dark manifestations occur, and he started to say that it was even turning into physical manifestations, and that's where he decided to let you tell the story. So I'm passing the baton to you.
Okay. Let's see. We were living in Los Angeles, in a place called Ganesha Hills near Pomona. And we were renting an in-law apartment in like an old colonial house. And things, actually, we had only been together about 5 months at that point. And things had been very challenging physically. I had been very sick and having problems sleeping and very difficult dreams and that kind of thing. And then at the, I guess progressively towards the end of September, when I eventually did decide to leave, I think 2 days before it transpired, I dreamed of a massive fire. And we were having fires in the hills at that point in Los Angeles. We were kind of surrounded by them, but they were fairly far away. And we were living above the Fairplex, the Los Angeles, the county fairgrounds. So there was a lot of concrete and cement. There wasn't too much to burn around there. But up where we were on the hill, you know, there were trees and you know, houses. And so we had gone out. And I guess 2 days before this actually had occurred, I had dreamed about a large fire coming to the house or coming near the house. So we went out and we came back, and there were 2 ways up the hill, and we came up the back way, and we came across a wildfire, which was racing up the hill, which seemed out of control, and there was no one around, and we called the fire department. We were the first people to have reported it. And it was there. I mean, it was too close for comfort. And it was unfortunately, I guess for me in that state, it was a confirmation that that my dream, you know, was a premonition type of a dream.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, whatever was transpiring, you know, was wreaking havoc with physical reality, and I was pretty terrified, and I just needed to get away. And so at that point, I left. I went up to Berkeley to stay with a friend, and then eventually I ended up moving to Atlanta. And I lived with my aunt for the next year or so. And then I moved back to where I'm originally from, is Massachusetts. I moved back to Cape Cod. So, you know, it's been challenging. It's been rough. It's, you know, it's still challenging in many ways. There are definitely forces that don't want this information out there. They don't want it disseminated. And they have the ability to make life pretty challenging, you know, for those who are at all susceptible to fear or doubt, or if they have unresolved karmic issues or karmic patterns. I guess that kind of sums it up in terms of.
I would like to make one comment, if I could, and this is interesting that you're talking about this, because should the opportunity arise, this would be a question I would pose to the council. We have dichotomies throughout the universe. If you look at the free will nature of the universe, and that God, or the creator, or the prime creator, whatever name you choose to call the supreme being that created everything that exists. Normally, most of us call him God on this planet. Him, her, I don't want to differentiate between the male-female aspect. The dichotomies are to allow the other side to exist. In other words, you can't have hot without cold. You can't have large without small. You can't have in without out. Or you can't be inside without having outside as the opposing force keeping things together in a physical reality. My understanding metaphysically is that those dichotomies exist to give form to all things. And so when you are picking up this message, or you are transmitting this message, or sharing this message, disseminating this higher knowledge, you are raising not only your frequency, but everyone else's frequency, the frequency of the planet, the frequency of the solar system, the galaxy, and the universe. You are enhancing the consciousness level on this plane. Even and this is irregardless of parallel timelines or parallel dimensions or intermingling dimensions. I think you put it out there, you know, the whole creation is a one entity in and of itself, and the divisions are the different roles of experience that are being played out by all the entities in this collage of experience that's going on. Some of it in a time frame, some of it totally devoid of time or free of time, where time doesn't exist. Now, when you're raising the consciousness, those that would pull us down on the dark side, because you're operating in the light, those who are operating in the dark are going to pull you down harder, or they are going to darken what they do. They're going to intensify the negativity that they have been putting out to counterbalance the positivity that and the light that you're bringing. So the more light you bring, the more darkness they have to manifest. The more consciousness you disseminate, the more control and oppression that they have to put upon people, the dumbing down process. And they do it secretly so that we don't notice it. That's a giveaway as to where it's coming from. So I think, yes, you are very correct that these entities, these beings playing these dark negative roles, they like to call themselves enlightened, and yet they are devoid of light, as far as I can see. If there is any light, it's the destruction in fire, and all the other dark things that they do. But, you know, I'm basically making a metaphysical statement that the higher we go with this, the more they're going to try to pull us down. And they're going to have the biggest impact on those who are unawakened and not conscious of these higher truths. That's why you see the sheeple, the people who are asleep, are now going into a coma. They're not just in a somnambulistic state. They're unconscious and you can't even bring them out of it. But then the issues, like you said, the karmic issues may be that they made that choice. You see, one of the questions I was going to ask is where free will, where the line is drawn as to where free will is allowed to exist and where it's not permitted to exist.
Would you like me to try to answer that from my conscious mind?
Yeah, and please understand, both of you, I don't mean to sound like I'm preaching. I'm just giving you my feedback,
You know, we'll put that in line, and if we end up doing a channeling, we can bring it up, okay?
Sure.
But here's how I understand that from my conscious mind, okay?
Okay.
Initially, free will was extended, and the concept of free will caused huge abuses to start taking place. In other words, if everyone has free will, then I have the free will to turn you into a slave, right? I mean, I have the free will to use my power and over you, and you don't know what's going on. Particularly if I am more evolved than you, that gives me the ability to use certain powers over you that someone else couldn't do. And so that started to happen to the point that this realm became hierarchical, and that there was leaders, people at the top, or energies or beings at the top, and the others became slaves. And the pattern has been going on for so long that the slaves are not even aware that they're slaves. They have just taken to say, this is the way it is. This is the way it works.
Yeah, and unconsciousness.
Consciousness. Now, beyond those beings who are doing this enslaving, and you know, this doesn't just happen on this realm. There's a hierarchy that goes from this planet into other realms, even to the point where there's what you could call, as far as I understand this, spirit forms that are negative, that get energy. The key about the negative is that it has to create a hierarchy to get an energy from others. In other words, it creates a subservience, so it demands their energy and lords it over them. So this goes on not just from humans, it goes on into non-human levels, into energetic forms in multi-dimensions. So now we have these two group souls that are this is where somebody has to study my material, who, to my indications, are above all of this stuff. And that they both exist in service, and they both are available to help those of us that are enslaved. And it's kind of, they're energetically available, but people don't even know they exist. And and once you even start to think that they exist, to be able to energetically connect with them is a giant step in itself. But the first step is you got to look for them. And you got to look for them and see where they are. And an important thing that in this show is I want to tell people how to look for them and how to find them, because there's a simple answer, at least that I'm offering, that seems to be working for people and helping people find these energies. It would be to describe it like you have a radio receiver, and there's all these different shows to tune in on. And some of them are negative and some of them are positive. Some of the frequencies you have very easy time tuning in because of your past life connections. And some you may not have ever tuned in or very rarely tuned in. And so these group souls are on that radio dial in your consciousness. And it's learning how to tune them in. Because now, once you start tuning them in, you can access an energy that is outside of this master-slave relationship that predominates in this realm. And they'll give you the opportunity over and over again, in lifetime to lifetime, to find them. But you need to have the discernment. First of all, you need to be looking for them. And you need to have the tools of discernment so you can tell the difference between when you're tuned in to a positive station and a negative station. So that's the way a human frees themselves. The choice is there, and when something is presented to you, you have to choose it. And you have to discern it, you have to choose it. And then you need the guidance to know what to look for and how to discern it. But ultimately, someone else can't save you. You have to save yourself by reaching into these higher realms and establishing your own relationship. Now, someone can help you make the relationship. Someone else can, like, let's just suppose you're looking for a job and somebody goes and introduces you and say, here's somebody that's looking for a job and here's somebody that's looking for a worker. Well, an introduction can be made, but after the introduction's made, it's kind of on you to establish the rapport. And so, does that make sense?
Yes. I wanted to make a comment, too. I'm agreeing with everything you're saying here. I understand this dichotomy. I guess what I'm doing is sort of putting it out there for the listening audience that they can consider this. And apply it to their own experience, to their own thoughts and their own reality and test it for themselves. As I this is based upon the last show, I sat down to start writing out some questions, and then the overwhelming feeling and the subsequent thought came over me. Why would you write down something that you know in your heart you're going to ask? And as I formulated the first question, it sort of just magically appeared. And as it was as if it was in space right before my eyes. It wasn't written down with a piece of paper and a pen or a pencil. It was just there, like on a screen. And I'm looking at this, and then the thought came to me, Or the realization, is this my question or is this the question you want me to ask so you can talk about this? that's how focused that question was. I knew it was going to be something that they would talk about.
like is the question being channeled itself?
Yes, or as if there's a meeting of the two energies, me and the group, and this dialogue is going on while I'm asking the question. Now I'm asking where the question came from rather than just the question, if you get my drift. So,
yeah.
You know, what you're saying makes sense. In fact, I can't say, you know, when I pray or when I meditate, when I intend and choose and manifest things, create things in my own reality, and that could be anything. It could be music or it could be something I'm writing or just my general thoughts on watching what's going on, observing what's going on, and trying not to be an ego participant in it, but to be of service to the whole picture, which is what I came here to be. I mean, you don't get a radio show and intend to be private about everything you talk about. you're opening yourself up, in a sense, I don't even mean to go into criticism or stuff like that. I'm just saying you're opening up yourself to take in your audience and hoping that they do the same thing, that we can establish a higher level of communication and a higher level of consciousness. So my process of writing or being a talk show host and interviewing people and sharing my thoughts as well as allowing my guests to do the same thing is a process of us all coming together and finding a common bond, finding the truth, finding a reality that is independent of this controlled system on this planet. So I'm in agreement with everything you're saying about the different dimensions and I think responsibility too is important, that when we make a choice, you know, it's always the right choice. We're either going to learn a lesson that's going to help us work through our karma, or we're going to keep making the same mistake until we get it right. And we've been taught to think that there's one way or another way. There are only two ways to do it. And we have been, let's say, fashioned into an automaton that says, well, they require us to do it like this because it's a law. Or this is what's acceptable amongst society. So therefore, I have to do this, or I am different, or I am an outcast, or I am lesser than the group. And when I look at the group and I say, if that's the price of being part of the group, I don't want to be part of the group, at least not that group. Let's create something new, and let's take responsibility for it rather than blaming someone else for it.
You know, what we're doing, what you and I are doing on this show, I mean, we're both obviously, I guess this is obvious, fairly intelligent, fairly good communicators. Obviously, we're not talking from a script. We're making things up as we go along. Neither of us is intimidated by the other. Both of us, you know, can have a free flow of communication. You know, oftentimes on talk shows, it's kind of like, the host comes on and says, this is Lynn, and he has this great, you know, they're kind of like pandering to my ego, thinking that I want this recognition and they're giving me this chance for it, and we're not doing that. You studied my material, and you've had me on enough times so that we're two humans talking to each other. We're two humans that have a high intention, that are intelligent, and good communicators, which means we're having this spontaneous communication, and your listeners are, like, joining with us and sharing the conversation. And so that means we are all in each other's heads. We're all in a kind of oneness just because we're doing something at such a high intention. And, God, I just lost my track of where I'm going with this. I had an idea.
You were basically commenting on what I was saying and the fact that we're agreeing with each other.
We're agreeing that, but it's the agreement is not so much in the words, it's in the energy. It's just an energetic agreement. So
mm-hmm.
it's a communion of our own spirits
energetically coming together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I describe this over and over and over again, and as much as I describe it, it is one of the hardest things to grasp and to feel. I mean, you can say it intellectually, like we exist in a hologram. We are not our body. Our energies go on right back to source potentially. And so we, for example, we exist in the whole, in a small way, people can understand that. Like if there's a group of people having dinner in their family, mm-hmm. They're all in a hologram and they can feel each other and they take it for granted what that feels like. But if you start monitoring yourself, you can start understanding what it means to be in a hologram because each of us is getting signals, but they're not normal signals. It's not like normal vision, thinking, emotions. When you're in a hologram, it's subtle. It's kind of like if you go into certain cities and you're walking down certain streets, the energy is all fragmented. In fact, you feel like, let me get out of here quick, okay? Mm-hmm. You go into another city, like if you go to, there's some beautiful picture book cities, like Sausalito, for example, is to me a picture book city. You go there and there's a feeling in the city, people really enjoy living there, there's a pride for the city, the city is beautiful, San Francisco is like that. Even though it's a city that's got kinds of ups and downs and poverty, in general, the city has an attitude and a vibe. When you go to San Francisco, you feel really good about being there. Most people do. And when you go to Los Angeles, it's like scattered. You have to work hard to find what I call coherent energy, because mm-hmm. the city doesn't really have coherent energy as a whole. It's got pockets of neighborhoods that you have to find a neighborhood that has coherent energy to feel comfortable there. Otherwise, you're really scattered. And when you drive from one place to another on the freeway and you're going like 20 miles, you know, you're going through such a mishmash of energies that by the time you go 20 miles in L.A., you're really tired. Because when you're in coherent energy, which means the holograms are all connected, you don't get tired. And when you're going through discordant energies, you do get tired. At least that's mm-hmm. my experience of it, okay? So everyone understands the idea of holographic energies. Maybe they understand that if they can relate to it in the way that I'm describing it. So mm-hmm. now we're talk about moving into holograms of the whole planet. The Earth has got one entire hologram, but we are all subsets of the Earth. And then the Earth is a subset of the solar system. Now, when we think of this in human terms, we think these are such huge, big expanses, it's hard to even imagine that your hologram could be as big as the Earth, or the solar system, or the galaxy. But my experience is, it can. Now, this doesn't mean you shut your eyes and you're seeing stars and planets. It's a totally nonverbal, non-thinking thing. It's that probably as you expand your space and your hologram to be cosmic instead of personal, there's an experience that you start to feel of energies in your space. You can feel the energy. You can feel a flow. I feel this, so I'm trying to describe it in the words that I can try to share the feeling of it.
Yeah, I understand that process. In fact, when Daphne was talking and she was describing the things that were happening, and she wasn't prepared for those things, and she didn't understand, at least in the beginning, she didn't understand where it was coming from. She experienced the fear, which is an illusion, really. But that's how powerful these illusions are. And we tend to want to go seek the former feeling, and so we resist possibly the change that's coming. For instance, the truth, and I described it as her process was moving up, and so that which would pull down is kicking all the harder, so to speak, or squealing. I like to use the analogy of the pigs that Jesus ran over the edge of the cliff, you know, after an exorcism. So what she was feeling was based upon on her lack of understanding of what was going on, and that's one of the foundational principles behind fear, which is an illusion.
If you know, I got to say it's deeper than that. Okay.
I'm keeping it at a level right now for the listening audience that they can, you know, just grasp that concept first.
Well, it would be more like this. Let's suppose when you're young, you were in a gang and you did all these things that were not very nice, and you had a bunch of people that you were doing them with, and then you reformed yourself, and you were living a straight-on life and a loving life, and then suddenly you're walking down the street and one of your old gang members passes you, okay? You see that guy and you're going to go, oh no, and your heart's going to sink. And it's very likely that he's going to like pull you in to an old energy pattern inside of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It could connect fear. Well, the thing is, we all have past lifetimes where we've been in gangs, so to speak, where we have relationships on this side and other sides that we've kept, that even when you're straightened up this life, something can tap you into those things in a snap, and you're pulled back. And then it becomes like going through a clearing of the pattern. Not just changing your belief, but clearing this affiliation, the energetic affiliation, the energetic cord that tied you to this gang member completely.
Yeah.
So that he didn't even remember, he didn't even recognize you when he saw you. It's like he looked at you. You see, if he looked at you and you didn't have a twinge inside, then he would not have anything to anchor his energy on, and he'd just walk on. But if he looked at you and you went through that twinge, is that the right word? I think so.
Yeah, twinge could be, yeah.
Then he's hooking you into the energy. So the challenge is, it's not just so easy to say stay out of fear, because most of us have these things in our past track. Of course, I'm talking about past lives, and, you know, that's something that a person has to come to in their own experience, but personally, I have had too many personal experiences that I know that reincarnation is the way it works. And I know that what I'm explaining here is real and true. But for somebody that hasn't explored this, then I would say just be open to the idea of this. And that is, go through thousands of lifetimes, or maybe even more than thousands, we continue ad infinitum, and there is a potential growth through lifetimes where we can lift the level of experience to where we're no longer in this 3D realm, but we're having lifetimes in higher realms where they're not so dense and they're not so dangerous, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to earn your way to that, and that requires a graduation. Otherwise, you keep coming back here, and you keep attracting the same people, and you keep repeating the same cycles. And from the Elohim and Ra's point of view, you know, the way they described it in one of the readings, which I think is in that booklet, that free booklet we give away called Questions and Answers with the Elohim, the way they described it was gross repeating patterns. Gross repeating patterns. For example, those who have studied reincarnation know that there was a continent, Atlantis, that blew itself up, that almost everyone died, but there was a group of people that were having spiritual connections with these two group souls at that time, like secret little private meetings, like, who knows how exactly it was, but they knew that the continent was going to explode, and many of this group left Atlantis before it exploded and ended up in Egypt and South America. And that's why you have pyramids in Egypt and South America, and astrology and many of the advanced Atlantean knowledge. Now, Atlantis was very advanced technologically, and there are many, many Atlanteans incarnate right now, and that we are at also a similar precipice where we could destroy ourselves or we could not. And it depends on will we make the same mistakes. And the same sources that were guiding the Atlanteans, the positive ones, are here now, and they're trying to communicate to us the significance of this period, and I'm one of the people that's talking to those sources and presenting it, making it available for other people to scrutinize, tune in, evaluate, and decide if it's meaningful to them.
Yeah. So, now, on the basis of all that explanation, now you've opened the door for me to maybe get closer to the root cause of all of this negative manifestation, and that, again, is the dichotomy of that which would come from God. Let's say if everything that God bestowed upon the universe was of the highest light and the highest intent, the highest creativity, the highest frequency, and whatever descriptions you want to give it, that which is opposing it, the dark, is still in a spiritual realm, but working, like you said, very accurately, through this hierarchy of energies, and where it comes down to Earth, and where it controls the society for at least the past 13,000 years, if not longer, it's manifesting itself from the spiritual realm, but the opposite of God. It would be like an anti-God or an anti-universe type of energy. And as it's in the process of taking control of us, it has to work discreetly and covertly for us to not notice what's going on. So it happens from the spiritual realm. This is the reason behind their magic rituals and their sacrifices and their spells and their alchemy and their numerology and all the dichotomy of the positive side, the light side of creation, is what they manifest. Pulling down the frequency, and once they get the frequency down to where they cause us to erroneously believe that we have been separated from the Creator, that somehow we don't have that source anymore. That's the principle under which they operate. And so then we have this physical reality. Then we have the mind control. Then we have the laws and the do's and the don'ts. And this is what this is how you are going to exist in our reality. They have been permitted under free will to create that reality, yet we came here with the intention of rising above that and reestablishing that higher connection, that higher consciousness. So in the sense now, I'm expanding upon my first comment about fear, dealing with it on the level that most people are conscious of it. Where does fear come from? It comes from the things that they do to us, but they've done it or they're successful with it because they've cut us off from source. At least if in no other way through their belief systems. Am I making my point clear?
The only thing
I would say is that I would say the dark is still part of God.
Yes, I'm not discounting that. That's the dichotomy.
It's you know, we do an extraordinary channeling every Wednesday night with a fellow by the name of Matthew, who lives in Marin County. And it's a live channeling where people ask questions. And he is channeling a source, which I believe is part of the Ra group, although he has not studied my material, or he does not want to put it under that umbrella. So he calls it his source, just keeps it at that. But it's actually answering questions every Wednesday night. And, you know, there's been some interesting questions about what we are talking about. For example, there was a question at one point was, how do you get rid of the shadow? Because the dark is the shadow, right? The shadow side. And so the answer was, well, there's three ways. One way is to turn off the light. And that gets rid of the shadow. The other way was to eliminate yourself, because then there's nothing to cause the shadow. And the third way was to turn towards the light so the shadow's behind you and you don't see it. And, you know, I thought that was extremely, you know, I had cognitions hearing that. Because, you see, if you turn towards the shadow and turn it into your enemy and you go into battle with it, you're only creating your own polarization with the energies of the shadow. So you turn around, so you're facing the light, and the shadow disappears.
What about a fourth? I have a fourth idea. Fourth solution, possibility, if you want to call it that. How about turn on the light so bright that no shadow can exist?
Yeah, but you know what? I don't think that works, because, I mean, using the analogy, the brighter the light, the stronger the shadow. As long as something is standing in the light, I mean, this is a allegory, so to speak. I mean, you could say, put lights from both sides and make them equal so there's no shadow. But if you turn on the light really brightly, then, I mean, if the shadow is like our own physical shadow, like the sun shining on our body and the shadow coming behind us, no matter how bright the sun is, you're not going to stop the shadow. The shadow will still be there.
Well, if the light is coming 180 degrees downward vertically, not at an angle, the only place there can be darkness is on the soles of our feet when we're standing.
Okay. Well, maybe you're right. Maybe if we can organize it so the light comes down, straight down, that will shatter on the bottom of our feet. But I think the translation, or if you want to take that parable, it's not a parable, you know, that allegorical way of explaining it that I just did, and take it and try to put it in words. Well, what are we really saying there? What we're saying is that to be in this universe, the shadow is part of our own existence. Each of us, to some level or another, partakes of a certain amount of shadow, because that's what gives us, you need enough separation to exist. If there was absolutely no separation, you wouldn't exist. Okay? So you need enough separation to exist. Some people may just need a little bit, and some people have a whole lot, okay? But that's what defines our existence, because we exist in that edge of separation. So the shadow is us to some extent.
And well, if the separation, you're just using the separation, we need the separation to exist. What's wrong with separating myself as much as possible from the shadow?
Well, the way you separate yourself from the shadow is to turn towards the light. How do you turn towards the light? It means you learn to find what's good in everything. You learn to be of service every day. You learn to make contribution. You learn to not make judgment. You learn to create a group of people around you that does honor free will, that does have, that operates in loving energy, so you're creating a spiritual family. These are things I'm doing, actually, a conference line in the work I'm doing,
mm-hmm.
and it's working. Because you see, as you do this, then you give other people the opportunity to reduce their shadows, and you get a group energy that starts to hold the light, and it does. It doesn't disappear, the shadow, but it certainly rises above it, okay? It rises
mm-hmm.
above it. People respond to it. People respond to light energy, at least those people that are looking and searching. And so, I mean, if people who are listening to us talk tonight resonate with this, and they don't have reference point for the light in their life, then I'm saying that, you know, one of the things that I'm doing is creating an ongoing reference point where you can look towards the light, you can get the guidance from these group souls, you can turn towards their energies and have them work with you, and we do it every day of the week. So, you know, they can come into my conference calls at 6 o'clock and then listen to Evident Footprints at 10 o'clock. And, I mean, if people really do those two things, they will probably start shifting their own consciousness. Because as people shift their consciousness and become higher up on the hologram, they then become part of creation down here. So instead of being effect, they become cause. And becoming cause means that you're becoming part of shifting the consciousness of the collective. And everyone is capable of doing this. They don't have to do anything special. They don't have to be against anything. They just have to hold their consciousness above the collective, and then it becomes like a homing device that if enough people do that, the collective shifts and the planet changes. Now, is that likely? Probably not. But it's hopeful. It's a goal. And it's something, even if we don't fix the whole thing, to whatever extent somebody is able to do that, they are now changing the vibration in this realm. Does that make sense?
Okay, we're back here on Evident Footprints. I saw a computer crash at the station, so wasn't my fault. Wynn was talking. Wynn is with us also. We apologize for the interruption. We were getting into something really good. And if I may, Wynn, not that there wasn't anything important being said, but what I did want to mention here was the fact that I have been listening to people talk. Now, you brought up a very good point. You brought up this idea of judgment. And I do my best not to judge. However, I do make observations, and I do write about my observations, and I speak about my observations, and I write strongly, and I speak loudly about my observations. Now, some people might interpret that as judgment, but the method is based upon not pulling myself into that space where what I say is just opinion, not based upon fact, or it's a rumor, or it's just me expressing fear. Now, when I listen to people talk about all the things that the New World Order elite are planning for us, all of these concentration camps, extermination camps, ovens, guillotines, how they're going to declare martial law, how they want to chip us, and they very well may intend to do all this. But that's not a fear that I have. I know that there's no reason to fear dying, that dying is just a transition. And because it's just a transition, and if I'm making an observation, I am not empathizing with it or sympathizing even. Because I think when we sympathize, we really give ourselves up to that energy totally. Empathy is a little bit different. It allows for understanding, and then it leaves me in a position empowered to present a solution or to offer help. Now, what I've noticed because of my recent awareness of how much of this negativity and how much of this fear is rampant, especially amongst the patriot groups and those people who are just now coming to the reality that something is wrong and they're waking up, to these physical and these mental pictures of their reality. They're seeing reality being distorted. They're not aware of these subtle energies at work that have always been at work but are being ramped up. And I noticed that when I made this decision that I was not going to succumb to this fear, that I was just going to speak the truth, and the truth should stand on its own merit. Yes, there are those that don't want the truth to come out, but I'm not gonna worry about that. I will speak about these things, but I will speak fearlessly, and I will not submit myself to the fear. I notice that every event in my life, day in and day out, is nothing but an endless string of synchronicities. The people that I would be doing this work with are appearing in my life. The friendships that I am building, such as with you and some of my other guests, that I have a particularly mutually strong connection with in terms of the message that we're bringing out and what we're striving for. I see this happening. It's as though it's just being brought on a silver platter, if you know what I mean. When you can consciously say, fear is an illusion and it's not real, even though it's necessary for this dichotomy. Or, you know, do you want to feel great and happy and carefree today and be scared out of your wits tomorrow just to maintain that dichotomy, that polarization? Or do you want to strive? Because that's always going to be there trying to pull you down. The main thing is I choose to go higher in frequency. And that doesn't mean lower in frequency, it means higher. So I did want to make that point and then have you expand on synchronicities and that.
What I was going to say was, what you're doing is you're actually creating, at least this is how it looks to me, you're creating a 4D reality. You're creating relationships with the people around you that are not based on agenda. They're not based on control. They're not based on, do you know how many people that go on radio shows are interested in attention and interested in exposure and wondering how many books they're going to sell? And you know, there's a whole network of like handshakes for people. You do this for me and I'll do this for you and all that stuff. I mean, now I'm not judging that. And it's just the way 3D works. Now, if you want to operate, and I say this to everyone who's listening, you have to start operating without agendas if you want to reach the higher consciousness. You have to start creating relationships around you that are based on innocence, that are based on service, that are based on unconditional love, And of course, you can't just do this with anyone. You can be in a loving state, and you can hold love no matter who's in your space. But if you're talking about an ongoing relationship, this is like not everyone's ready for that. So you can't just pick people and say, okay, I'm going to be unconditional loving, because you might be unconditionally foolish, okay? Because people take advantage of, okay?
Yeah.
So, you know, when you talk about unconditional love, you have to approach that with a lot of discernment. But if you want to lift your vibration out of this realm, if you want to hold the higher energy, you must start building people around you that will hold that energy with you, that will not have agendas. And that's exactly what you're describing is exactly what you're doing. You're having a team of people that you really appreciate. You're putting them on your show because you believe it's important for them to be heard. You're holding a pure energy and letting them shine in your space. And, you know, that makes you shine also. And you're doing it with a very high sense of service. So all your listeners are having the opportunity to share in that process every time they listen to you. And that creates a radiant energy that expands out to everyone that listens. And it creates a model that everyone can do. Everyone, if they put their mind to it and they hold their intention high, can create a couple of people in their life that the relationship is based on a high spiritual connection. And, you know, I go back to our conference line. That's exactly what we're doing on our conference line. It's happening. People that maybe felt isolated, insular, didn't know anybody, they're coming in on the conference line. Before you know it, there's people that are reaching out towards each other. And it's happening not because I'm doing it. I'm just like sitting there throwing pawns in a rock, and people are picking up on it and taking the opportunity to partake of real camaraderie. And it's pretty amazing to watch, because I never imagined it was something that I was I would be able to hold the energy for the creation of that. Because I'm very human, I have all my failings and my grumpiness and whatever, but in spite of it, I know it's been my intent, my commitment to the intent and the vision of something to cause something to happen. And so, everyone is capable of this, and you're demonstrating it yourself every night on Evident Footprints.
Well, I wonder what you would say about my Saturdays and Sundays. No, I'm just kidding. I call into your show.
You don't do Saturdays and Sundays, right?
I call into the Don and Wynn show. Well, you know, understand I'm not putting myself on a pedestal. I wanted to share that with you, because it's interesting that was going to be one of the issues that I brought up in the question. You know, had Daphne, been in the space, you know, to channel this evening, I was going to direct that question so that others could hear this answer. It doesn't make it any less valid if it comes out of your mouth or mine. But I was interested in what they would say too, because my understanding is that in the process of determining that I was not going to submit or buy into the fear, whatever the nature of it is. I mean, you know, there's fear about the weather. There's fear about, are we going to have food? There's fear about the dollar crashing. You know, these are all negative things that are intended to create fear, to bring people into a state of willing submission to further control. And I'm telling myself, I can't recall any time in my life, in my years, since I was born, I can't recall consciously giving up my sovereignty, my God-given sovereignty. And on that basis, that is what I'm reclaiming. And I'm making these positive statements, taking responsibility for what happens to me. What I notice is that this becomes effortless.
Well, you know, there is a flip side of this coin, which is we've all had many lifetimes where we've suffered, and suffering is painful, and it's probably, on some levels, worse than dying. Because dying, you just move on and transition. But suffering, you're here and you're in pain. And suffering is not something to look forward to. And it takes a huge amount of inner strength to be able to go through suffering and keep smiling and bite the bullet when that's going on. Because, you know, things are collapsing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the collapsing of the old, for many people, is going to create suffering. And, you know, I pray that we reach towards each other. You know, there's going to be a lot of opportunity for the best and the worst to surface over the next year. When there's adversity, there is the opportunity for the best to come out of people, to help each other. We've all heard of towns that had earthquakes and this and that, and so many people came and rose to the occasion and even risked their life, their lives and their comfort to help other people. And then there's other circumstances where something happens and you hear about looting, you hear about, you know, all kinds of horrible things and people taking advantage of the circumstance. And, you know, it's by holding the highest vibration and a group of people holding the highest vibration that when things happen that are uncomfortable, then a number of people hold the vibe above fear. But if there aren't enough people holding the vibe above fear, then fear can prevail, even in people that would not normally be fearful.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no absolute rule about all of this, except right now, while things are still not collapsed, while things are still functional, while there's an internet, while there's books, while we have channeled voices, where there's media communications going on that are accessible, the way I look at it is I have to work like crazy to make my own contribution as focused as possible, because I'm not sure the contribution would be possible 5 years from now to reach the amount of people that it could reach right now. And yet those are the people 5 years from now that are going to keep the level of vibration above fear if they've learned these principles.
Well, I can draw an analogy to what you just described. You know, you're talking about the possibility of the internet disappearing. Well, there was a time when everybody had 8-track players in their car. And they had these book-sized, tapes, cartridges that they would put into this, slot at the front of the player. Many of the players didn't even have a dial. or a control other than an eject button. And you put these things in there. Well, they went by the wayside. They didn't last that long, actually. They were cumbersome. The companies that made these made a quick killing, and it wasn't very practical, and most people didn't get it. And after it became passé, and they stopped making the recordings on these tapes, and the machines themselves broke down, you didn't really hear anybody lament about 8-track players anymore. You might run across one in a garage sale just like maybe in 5 years from now, you're going to go to a garage sale and see the very computer that you own today, and it's going to be considered as worthless as that 8-track player would be today. It's
uh-huh.
all about the fear of change, as far as I see it. People are still holding on to the fear that somehow change has to be for the worse.
Uh-huh.
And you're talking about creating, and really that's what I'm talking about, is that we can create exactly the reality we would choose. And we can keep recreating it and making it better. And we would have constant change. Somehow, we think that if things change, they have to be for the worst. And the way things are right now, that's exactly what's happening, because everyone has, I'm being general, you know, when I say everyone has bought into the fear. The majority has bought into the fear. And so they're being...
You know, you talked about the sheeple, right?
Yeah.
The sheeple. Well, you know, it's like we could look at things falling apart as being negative. We could look at no gas as being negative. We could look at the dollar being valueless as being negative. At the same time, we've got the majority of the world's population in a state where they are not going to, according to, you know, we didn't talk about this too much, but we have a graduation taking place on our planet, and the graduation has to do with being in your heart, and most people don't qualify for that graduation, and at times of adversity that we're talking about can give people the opportunity to switch. It can give those people who have been studying and learning how to keep their hearts open the chance for leadership that they would have never imagined would come to them.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes, you know, it's kind of like we're laying a bunch of seeds now. And it's a lot of the stuff that we talk about in terms of the dark, which is true. I know it's happening. You know it's happening. Most of us are powerless to confront it directly. And if we did, we'd be dead. But you know what? We're not powerless to hold our consciousness, to hold the loving energy, and to plant seeds right now, because if enough seeds are planted, and maybe it's going to be area by area, maybe this is going to be a good area, some particular area, because there were seeds planted there, and those people are going to hold a teamwork and a high consciousness, and another area is going to be falling apart, and people are going to be going against each other, and this is a time to keep your eyes open and be prepared for changes and maybe be prepared to move at a moment's notice. It's not going to be easy for a lot of people, but
yeah.
If we're going to have a disintegration of things, then there's definitely going to be good areas and bad areas. It's not going to be just, you know, at this point on this planet, I don't see a total lifting of energy everywhere. It's not going to happen. I don't think. Now,
yeah.
Maybe miracle upon miracle upon miracle, something will change that. But it's not enough time, and there's too many patterns, and there's too many control mechanisms in place. And it really takes personal connection from person to lift energies and keep hearts open. You
mm-hmm.
can't do it by edict. So I don't know how many of us and how fast we can make this fly. But I do know there's going to be huge opportunities of service for those people who wonder what their purpose is on this plane, for those people who have learned to keep their hearts open.
Mm-hmm. It's a bit ironic when you use the example of planting seeds. When you plant a seed, you have to plant it usually in the ground in the dark, and it comes out of the dark and moves toward the light. It's interesting. Mm-hmm.
One of the things is that there are people all over the world that are becoming seeds. There's people that are listening to your show. There's people that are quietly going to work in what seems to be a negative environment, and they're learning to hold positive energy in spite of that. And these people are the leaders of the near future. And I hope that your audience has a bunch of them in them.
Well, I'm sure they do, or they wouldn't even be listening to the show. These are people that are you know, reaching out for that energy that you're
Mm-hmm.
I'm not, this is not ego talking. I feel the intention behind your words and definitely behind mine. And I get a lot of nice email from folks thanking us for the message that
mm-hmm.
we bring. Thanking us for the truth that we bring forward. Regardless of where it comes from, they're happy to hear the truth. So, you know, if you have a concern, they are in tune. They are listening. And people from all over the world.
I shouldn't even said that with a concern, because I should say if they're attracted to listening to you, then they couldn't help but be connected with this kind of intent inside themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I hope they'd be listening to Howard Stern's.
Yeah. Well, you know, Howard has his purpose, too.
I'm sure he does.
You know, he can act out that which I choose not. So,
you know what? He probably has some high-intended people listening to him also.
Mm-hmm.
So, maybe I should have said Rush Limbaugh. Okay.
Yeah, it's, you know, these, you know, we become personalities depending upon the message, too. I notice that the lower the vibration of the message, the more the host of some of these shows is really the show. And there is really no substance to the message other than sort of a loop that just keeps repeating itself. You know, it's like an endless loop in a videotape machine. When the loop is full, it erases what was previously recorded and starts putting the new material over the first recording. And eventually it loses its ability to record. And those people they rely on an ever-changing audience. I'm not asking my audience to abandon this show. I'm hoping that there is so much truth that comes out that they keep coming back as if it were for another drink of water that they can't get somewhere else. That was a pretty neat metaphor, wasn't it? No.
Was that?
So, you know, it's not like I'm competing with anyone. No, this is not about competition. We have enough of that on the planet as it exists. Well, when
we're keeping Seth up late tonight, huh?
Yeah, we're keeping Seth up, but we got bumped off the call, so he's paying the penalty for that right now. In parting, you want to give out some web addresses and leave us with a warm, fuzzy message of benevolence that the listening audience can hang on to until your next appearance?
We're going to be on exactly 1 week from today, right?
Yeah.
Wednesday.
Next Wednesday.
Well, you know, I am a person who is a emissary. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
My work is probably one of the better presentations of the positive other realms, how they interact with us, how they connect with us, how they can help us, and how we can connect with them. And it's, a lot of it is never been put forth in the world before. It connects with God, but it creates how God operates in a more, less mystifying fashion, and explains it in a way that I believe is more close to how it really works. And within these two group souls that are subsets of the one original creator. And many people are having huge cognitions as a result of studying my work, coming on to my conference calls, etc., etc. So those of you that are listening, we have a free ebook called Questions and Answers with the Elohim. Elohim is the name of God in the Old Testament. It was the name of the God that Joseph Smith was talking to. And if I have it correct, I've been having ongoing conversations with the same source, and they're explaining really who they are, how they operate, but without any religiosity attached to it. So it's a free ebook called Questions and Answers with the Elohim. And then I have a book that's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's called The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. And it introduces the other soul group, the Ra group, who is also available to us, and how they work. And then we have a ongoing conference call. And I would say a good introductory call is our Monday night call, which is right here on BBS Radio, where we do a simulcast between a telephone conference line and an internet broadcast. And oftentimes we have live channelings on these calls. I would say more often we do than we don't. And there's two people in my life who have been helping me with the channeling side of this and bringing forth these messages. One is Daphne, who said hello earlier. Would you like to say hello again? Good night.
Hello. Good night.
Thank you, Daphne, for appearing on the show tonight.
You're welcome.
And the other is Terry. And next week, I would like to say that maybe we'll have Terry on if she is up to it, and maybe both Daphne and Terry, and we will try to get the energy right so that we can actually do a real channeling and let these guys talk to you on the show, you, the listeners. And these two creative, huge creative energies that might have been interpreted as God throughout our history, talking to us and explaining who they are, how to connect with them. And I'm not promising it. We were going to do it this week, but it didn't happen. We often do it on Monday on the BBS show. It's called the Winfrey Conference Hour at 6 p.m. And so thank you, Don, for having me. Thank you all for listening, and we look forward to the next time we are on Evident Footprints.
Well, I appreciate you coming on the show. If I can ask one thing, I've had the sneaking suspicion that they've been listening to this whole show, and I don't require an answer right now. But in the proceeding days, if you can ask if they were particularly paying attention to what we talked about tonight, that would be interesting, because even though they didn't speak, maybe they used us to speak.
Well, you know what? I can almost say certainly they were paying attention to us during this show. The fact that the three of us are on, I've learned that when I talk about them, they pay attention. You know, Don, I've never done this on your show. And if we could take another minute, I'd like to share something with your audience and with you. And that is that the thing I've learned about these two group souls is that they're not just voices talking through somebody. They actually exist
outside of time, and they can beam into this realm as light energy. And I've become accustomed enough to working with this that if I ask them, and I ask you, they just probably would be open to coming into the space. Because we've done this oftentimes on our Monday night call. And the fact of the matter is that everyone listening, no matter where they are in the world, is accessible to this kind of energy flow. And if you open up your sensitivity right now, if you open up your heart, what we do is we create a group energy amongst all of us. See, all of us that are listening exist in this hologram. And the hologram, the part of us in the hologram, is fluid. And we can reach and touch each other and commune with each other. And when we do that, we can create a space to have these positive group energies join with this hologram that we're creating. And if you shut your eyes, some of you may be able to sense this. You may see a light on the inside of your eyelids. You may feel an energy around your third eye. You may feel an energy coming into the top of your head in what's called the crown chakra. And those energies that you're feeling, to my experience, is actually them. They can beam in like that and make you feel that energy. And that's one of the ways I know they're paying attention to me, because they love to do that. They love to work with people and make their presence known, not just as a voice giving information, but as an energy that you can tap into anytime you want. And if you happen to be feeling that, if you're feeling a vibration in your space, then you're a really good candidate to come to my Monday night call, because it's there all the time during that call, and it's like a reference point. It's like an introduction to the energy of these group souls, and it's a way of getting them anchored into this realm, getting them to do interventions here, and learning how to ask that energy for the help you need in your life and for the people around you for the highest good of all concerned. So I wanted to just invoke that. And Don, thanks for letting me do that. And to me, that is one of the most important things that I do, even more important than channeling, because I'm not a channel. And yet I've learned that if I ask them to come into the space, they will. And that means they'll do that for you also, and they'll do it for your listeners. It's just a matter of learning how to become familiar with their frequency and have your intent high enough to penetrate the veil that separates us and them. So on that note, thank you, good night, and thank you, Don, for having me on.
Well, it's a pleasure. I just wanted to let you know that before you began describing the process, I could feel them in my heart center. So.
Okay, I could feel you feeling them, actually.
Okay. All right, thank you.
And what's amazing is I just start to intend to have them in, and before I even say it, they know I'm doing that. Mm-hmm. And they start descending and visiting people, you know? So that was not your imagination, you guys that are listening. They were really there. Okay. God bless you, Don.
When you have a good night, folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. We apologize for the interruption that we had earlier. Computers do crash. And we had a heavy message coming through, so I wouldn't be surprised if those dark forces we were talking about wanted to keep the message from even getting over the airwaves. But we succeeded in getting back on, so we appreciate your patience and your understanding. Quick note, for tomorrow evening, I'm scheduled to have Dr. Judy Wood on the show, and she had to cancel, and I may have a surprise guest on tomorrow, but even if I don't, we have plenty to talk about. You're going to want to listen to tomorrow's show anyway, and I love having you here with me, and I will tomorrow be taking phone calls from the listening audience, so I want to wish you, in the meantime, a very peace, love, and light-filled night. And special thanks to Seth for hanging in there a bit longer tonight. Have a good night.